So now we're going to move to Nick Ward's presentation. Nick is a graduate student in search of his PhD at the College of Oceanography. And what Nick is extremely interested in is applying his findings to gain a better understanding of the role of rivers in the global carbon cycle. So look forward to hearing your talk, Nick.
Thanks. So today I'll be talking about my work with the watershed portion of the Hood Canal Dissolved Oxygen Program, and also what we've learned from this work in terms of the processes involved in transferring nutrients such as carbon and nitrogen from terrestrial reservoirs into rivers. So Al's already given a pretty good overview of the Hood Canal Dissolved Oxygen Program. The basic idea is we're trying to find out why we have low oxygen here. So among the things controlling low oxygen in Hood Canal in particular is photosynthesis in the surface ocean. So by producing biomass, algae or phytoplankton in the surface ocean, we are fixing carbon from the atmosphere and using nutrients from the water, and that actually creates oxygen. Now when this biomass sinks to depths, the opposite reaction occurs, and bacteria actually consume that biomass. And by consuming that biomass, we're depleting the oxygen in the water. So we get this buildup of very low oxygen at deep water, and it's when that low oxygen water comes up that we're concerned about it. So as part of the watershed group, I'm interested in how much nutrients are coming in from the rivers, so from land. So Al and his group, they have looked at how much nitrogen is coming in from the ocean on a kind of natural time scale, and we're looking at what's coming in from the river and how this might change over time. So the way the overall group is doing this is by developing this complex model. So it's a distributed hydrology soil vegetation model. So the basic idea is that we build up these different layers. So we start with elevation, add on soil, different kinds of soil, and then you add on your vegetation type. And then basically we start with a precipitation forcing, so we drop rainwater on it, and we can calculate where that water flows and what it brings with it. So based on the vegetation and soil, how much nitrogen, nitrate, ammonia, all of that is going into the water and where is it going. So this model is validated by measuring the chemistry of all 43 streams draining into the Hood Canal. And these samplings were done on a monthly basis. So before I got to UW, they collected monthly samples from all of these streams for 3 years. And the question that my study asks is a monthly sampling good enough? Is that accurate enough to make good calculations? So how do these nutrient concentrations in the river change on shorter timescales? So some early work that Peter Steinberg did showed that even over a week-long period, these lines all represent total dissolved nitrogen in the river. Even on a week-long period, we can have huge changes in the actual concentration of nutrients in the river. So you can see in the Union River, concentrations went from almost 0.2 to almost 1 in a matter of a day. So if we took our monthly sample right here, it would be a lot different than if we took our monthly sample right here, right? So that's what my study is seeking to answer. So the goal of my storm sampling project is to determine the short-term variability in river nutrient concentrations. And also something we've gotten out of this study is a better understanding of the dynamic processes behind this variability. So what controls the transferring nutrients from land into water? So I focused my study down in this Lynch Cove region. And basically, I set up two autosamplers at the mouth of the Skokomish River and the Union River. So these two rivers are representative of most of the rivers draining into this lower Lynch Cove region, where low oxygen is the biggest issue. So this picture shows you what the autosampler looks like. Basically, what it is you have 24 samples that you can take over a defined interval. So you can tell it to take a sample every 4 hours, every 5 hours, whatever you want. So we set up one of these ISCO samplers here and here, and set it for 3 to 4 day periods. So we gathered 24 samples over only a 3 or 4 day period, getting a very high resolution look at these different parameters. So what we measured was total dissolved nitrogen, dissolved organic carbon, dissolved silica, phosphorus, and other nitrogen species like ammonia and nitrate. And then also we measured the total suspended sediments, the particulate carbon and nitrogen concentrations. So these are all up here. These are dissolved concentrations. We also measured the particulate concentrations of these nutrients. And then the last two parameters we measured in an effort to see how the source of these nutrients changed throughout a storm. So we measured the stable isotopes and also these dissolved lignin phenols, which I'll tell you more about at the end, to determine the source and how the source changed throughout storms. So now I'm going to go ahead and get into some of the data that we've collected. So I wanted to also add, we did this over a year-long time period, so from October 2008 to October 2009. So we got a high-resolution look at each significant storm through this whole year. So this first plot shows you total dissolved nitrogen concentrations in yellow. In blue, you'll see dissolved organic carbon concentrations. And this gray line represents the river discharge. So as we get higher river discharge, more water's flowing through the river. So you can see this stunning correlation between the concentration of nitrogen and carbon and the river discharge. Remember, these are concentrations, not total fluxes. So if we looked at the total flux of nitrogen, for example, it would basically be this gray line multiplied by this yellow line. So not only are we getting more flux of nutrients during a storm, we're also getting higher concentrations. And this in itself is a pretty neat finding. So this was during the first autumn storm, I should add. This was after a long, dry summer. And our first autumn storm, we're getting this high correlation between nutrients and river discharge. Now, if we go for this is the same storm, if we look at the ratio of carbon to nitrogen, see the same relationship. And this is pretty neat, just this high-resolution look at what's going on. So at peak runoff, there's more dissolved carbon than dissolved nitrogen when you compare it to this base flow condition. Also, same trend if we look at the nitrogen to phosphorus ratio increase as river discharge increases. So what these ratios tell us is that the carbon is somewhat more easily mobilized from the soils than the nitrogen, and the nitrogen is somewhat more easily mobilized from the soils than the phosphorus. And this is consistent with some of the kind of theories in the literature saying that phosphorus is a sticky molecule. So phosphorus undergoes all these interactions, precipitation and dissolution reactions, that makes it harder to take out of soils than nitrogen, for example. And we've demonstrated this with a very high-resolution look. So now let's go on to another. One other thing for this storm is dissolved silica concentrations. So we see the opposite trend with dissolved silica concentrations. There actually appears to be a dilution of silica with increased river discharge. And I'll touch on why that is in a few slides. So now if we continue through the winter, we've had subsequent storms in October and November, a lot of heavy rainfall. Now we're in a January storm. So we still see this relationship between discharge and nutrient concentrations. But you'll notice that the magnitude of this change is far less. So for example, during November, 160% increase in river discharge resulted in about 160% increase in total nitrogen. Now in January, after we've had a bunch of successive storms, a 100% increase in discharge only results in about a 30% increase in total nitrogen concentrations. So this relationship is diminishing. Now, as we sampled through March through June, all these other storms, this correlation between river discharge and concentrations disappeared. So with a hydrograph looking just like this, our concentrations were either level or dropping a little bit. So it appears that we have a source of these nutrients accumulating, and then it's being depleted. So this leads to a kind of a simple two-box model that we use to describe how the river system is working. We have to excuse that it's not on a very steep slope, just pretend it's sloped, and that water flows downhill. So basically, this is our model during the dry summer. So our nutrients in this green pool are accumulating. So we have this green pool of nutrients that's building up when there's no rainfall. Now this blue arrow indicating water flow shows that there's a base flow of water. That base flow is what's keeping the river wet during the summer when there's not rain falling, right? And with that base flow, we're also getting this flux of nutrients. So the red arrow indicates a nutrient flux. So we're picking up this silica, we're picking up carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, and all of that's flowing into the river, and we have our base flow concentration. Now when we have our first storm after a long dry period, this green pool has accumulated. We get surface runoff, this blue arrow here. So that's the water that's just going onto the ground straight into the river. We still have our base flow that's pretty much the same size arrow here, but we also have this very small water flux going from this layer. So this green layer of this top layer of soil becomes saturated, and when that top layer of soil becomes saturated, it essentially pushes out those nutrients with it. So we have a very small amount of water, but a very large amount of nutrients going into the river system. So that's why we actually see increased concentrations in carbon and nitrogen and phosphorus, but a decrease in silica. So the silica is being diluted by this surface runoff, whereas these other nutrients are being enriched. So this, using this simple model, this helps us explain some of the other data that we've collected. So this shows data from a September 2009 sampling. So we've just had a long summer, it's been dry, and we would think this green pool of shallow nutrients has accumulated, right? So why is it that we see a huge increase in river discharge and almost no change in nutrient concentrations, maybe a slight increase? Well, fortunately, I was down there when I did the sampling and could make some qualitative observations about what was going on. So with what separates this September storm from, say, the earlier sampled October storm is that the rainfall wasn't consistent. So you'd have 30 minutes of a drizzle, and then the rain clouds would move somewhere else, and then the sun would be out, and the ground would dry. So the ground was literally not getting saturated enough to push out this layer. Now, it probably actually was pushing out a little bit of that layer, and that's why we don't see a dilution of nutrient concentrations, right? Because if we weren't pushing out any of that layer, you would think the surface runoff would cause nutrient concentrations to decrease. So we're only mobilizing a little bit of those nutrients when the rainfall's not adequate to saturate that soil layer. Now, on the other hand, if we look at total suspended sediments indicated by these black dots, we can see a direct correlation between discharge and total suspended sediments. So that basically means how much dirt is suspended in the river water. So it makes sense when we have surface runoff, we're pushing dirt into the river, right? So what goes with that dirt? Well, now if we look at the particulate carbon and nitrogen concentrations, we can see for this same September storm where we saw no change in dissolved nutrients, we see this large change in particulate carbon and nitrogen concentrations. So this is indicating that there's also a reservoir of particulate stuff building up that's pushed out with the surface runoff. And then in addition to that, we have our dissolved layer. And I'll get into more of that in a few slides. So if we look at all of the storms throughout the year, we see this relationship between particulate concentration, nutrient concentrations, and river discharge. And just like with the dissolved nutrients, by March, this relationship almost disappears. So we see no relationship between river discharge and particulate concentrations. Whereas I might add, the total suspended sediment concentrations are related to river discharge throughout the year. And that's just how much dirt is in the water, basically. So no matter what time of year, the rain will always put some dirt in the water. So this kind of shows a summary of what I was talking about. We have the hydrograph here throughout a year. So during this low point in the hydrograph, we're accumulating nutrients. During the fall and early winter, we're mobilizing those excess nutrients. And then in this third period here, we've already exhausted that pool of nutrients, and now it's just kind of base flow conditions taking over. So if we calculate overall nitrogen fluxes based on either the monthly average or... So what I've done is compared the monthly average calculations of total nitrogen flux to a calculation that takes into consider into consideration the relationship between concentrations and discharge. And so for October of 2007, it was pretty good. The model estimate was about 10% lower than my estimate, which took into account that concentrations increase as river discharge increase. Now, on the other hand, for November, the monthly average calculation was about half as much as my calculation. So that means that the sample was probably taken at a point when river flow was exceptionally low or below average, meaning that the monthly average calculation was too low. Now, the same thing would happen if you took the sample at peak discharge. You'd have an overestimate, right? So in terms of the model, what the people are doing with the model to make total calculations, to be really accurate, it'd be worth going back and seeing when those monthly samples were actually taken, whether it was during average conditions or below average conditions. Now, I'll briefly touch on my work with this lignin phenol tracer study. So lignin is this large macromolecule that is unique to terrestrial plants. So it's only found in terrestrial plants. So we know if we find lignin in our water sample, it has to be from a tree or a plant or a grass. So what we do when we analyze it is we actually break this large molecule up into these small little rings. So these are all individual phenols that we can break apart. Now, different plants have different ratios of these different phenols to one another. So, for example, a gymnosperm would have more of a certain kind of these phenols than an angiosperm. So we can make differentiations on what kind of plant the source of this carbon is. So the goal of this tracer study is to determine variability in the source of nutrients throughout a storm, and also to gain even a better understanding of the processes behind this observed variability, to expand on our simple two-box model. And also something that we've gotten out of the study is we've enriched the virtually non-existent data set that's out in the literature. So the amount of data points that I collected for just this study is almost double of what's present in the literature. Not to mention we've seen some pretty cool trends. They're not just scattered data points. So this plot shows the total dissolved lignin concentration throughout a storm. So just like with dissolved carbon, we see this relationship between lignin and river discharge. So what this plot alone tells us is that, yeah, we're putting more terrestrial carbon in when there's high runoff, which makes sense. So now I don't have time to show the rest of the plots, but by looking at the different ratios of these different phenols to one another, we've been able to make some preliminary looks at what's going on. So during peak runoff, there's a shift towards more degraded material. So at our peak runoff here, this material is more degraded than this base flow material. Also, we can tell that it's from a more woody than a leafy source, so things such as bark versus leaves. And it's also from a more gymnosperm source, so coniferous trees, rather than either deciduous trees or flowering plants. So during our peak runoff, we have woody and gymnosperm-derived stuff that's been more degraded. So when we also look at the stable isotopes that I don't have time to show you the graphs of, we've been able to kind of come up with a modified two-pool model. So the basic idea is that we have this pool of highly enriched particulate stuff that accumulates during a dry period. So this is from just detritus, you know. We have our particulate pool that's building up, and from that particulate pool, we're degrading this dissolved stuff. So we have these dissolved compounds that are derived from this enriched particulate material. So then when we have our storm, our surface runoff here mobilizes all of these particulate nutrients, and then we have these dissolved nutrients that are mobilized. So in summary, gathering of monthly samples during non-average conditions could have a significant effect on our modeled nutrient flux estimates. Is the magnitude and timing of these storm events significant to Hood Canal hypoxia? That's something that these models will help us answer. Also, results from this study in particular can be used to help increase the accuracy of future modeling efforts because we have a better understanding of the conceptual dynamics of this system. And with that, I'm going to thank the people who helped on this work, and I'd especially like to thank Sean Hildebrandt and Dan Hannafaust from the Hood Canal Salmon Enhancement Group, who did helped with a lot of the sampling. With that, any questions? Yeah, all the way back there.
Yeah, some of the things that you're tracing in the water, can they be used to determine the proportion of nutrients that are coming from mass wasting events versus surface erosion in watersheds? Is that sort of outside of the scope?
That's a good question. So we've measured the stable isotopes of nitrogen and also these lignin phenols. And there's a lot more work we can do with what we've already, the data we've already collected that we haven't done. For example, with the lignin stuff, we can, if we got really into it, we could maybe determine whether stuff is coming from alder trees or septic tanks or just plant, you know, leaves and stuff. So that really, we need to do some more looking into that. Does that answer your question somewhat?
I don't think it's an easy question to answer.
Yeah.
What have you noticed about the shift in the ratio of inorganic nitrogen to organic nitrogen as the you get through more and more rainstorms?
Right.
Are you seeing less inorganic?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually am just starting to look into that a lot more. And you do see a... So the question he asked was, do you see a shift in the ratio of inorganic nitrogen to organic nitrogen through continuing storms? And if I remember correctly, if I plotted the ratio of nitrate to dissolved organic nitrogen during a storm, at the peak of the storm, there's more nitrate than dissolved organic nitrogen. So it'd be the same if we looked at this C to N plot. Just imagine this is nitrate to DON. So you actually see an input of more inorganic stuff at the peak of the storm. And yeah, I think actually as the year goes on, that begins to diminish. And almost even in March, it might have flip-flopped. I can't remember exactly, though. Any other questions? Yeah?
How does it relate to the timing of the fish kill, the timing of this?
How does the timing of these storm events relate to the fish kill? So I think that I believe the fish kills most often occur kind of late summer or early fall. And the timing of these storms is typically a little bit after that, probably. But Hood Canal is such a stagnant body of water that when you put in nitrogen during the winter, it's really sticking around until the next growing season, right? Because it's very light limited during the winter, so you're not getting a lot of primary production. So it's possible that that nitrogen is sticking around for quite a long time, up to a year maybe even. Yeah.
Do you have any estimate of marine-derived nitrogen coming back from salmon carcasses?
I do not. Maybe Al has a better estimate of that. Any other questions? Thank you.